Hey, it's Movie Snark, making fun of what comes out of Hollywood. Explicit language guaranteed. I'm Archie Andrico, and you'll hear my voice a lot, though there will be guest readers. All movie parody scripts come from the-editing-room.com. This time it's Superman, written by Craig, read by Andrew Adam Caldwell.
Fade in. Interior. Plastic model of Krypton. Marlon Brando and a bunch of giant wall faces are holding a trial. Marlon Brando.
Turd Stump and Turd Stump's two angry friends, we find you guilty of trying to take over the entire world, apparently just by yourselves. Anyway, you're hereby banished to the sequel Hook Dimension.
The criminals are imprisoned in a passing space Polaroid.
Marlon Brando. Well, that was irrelevant. Now on to more pressing concerns. Hey, bureaucratic government pricks, Krypton is about to explode!
Bureaucratic pricks.
Is not.
Marlon Brando.
Is too.
Bureaucratic pricks.
Is not infinity. We're warning you, Marlon. If you cause a panic by fleeing the planet, will Polaroid banish the shit out of you, which you already said was preferable to being on the planet when it explodes?
Marlon Brando.
But it turns out we've studied the cultures of dozens of other planets, so wouldn't a scientist going on a space voyage be totally routine around here and not at all panic-inducing? But fine. I promise that neither of the adult members of my family will leave the planet. Ha ha, loophole.
Marlon goes home and builds an interstellar spacecraft in his garage, then sticks his baby son inside it.
Marlon Brando. I'm sending him to a planet called Earth, where his dense molecular structure will give him super strength and invulnerability, and since density makes you unusually heavy, he will obviously be able to fly. Also, eye lasers for some reason.
Susanna York. Maybe we should have just stuck with the usual yellow sun equals superpowers bullshit.
Marlon Brando.
Anyway, good luck, son. Off you go.
Launch a spaceship.
Wait, babies don't need, like, food or anything, do they?
Immediately, the planet starts to collapse into a typical 1970s disaster movie set implosion chaos.
Marlon Brando.
The planet's blowing up. Run!
Susanna York.
To where, exactly?
Finally, Krypton explodes, as predicted, and so does its sun, as was never hinted at, and doesn't really make sense, while Super Baby flies off through a version of space that is unusually full of psychedelic smears and blobs.
Marlon Brando, on spaceship radio.
Son, my digitized consciousness will now teach you science, mathematics, and earth facts for the duration of your journey. Of course, without any stimuli other than my voice, there's no way for you to learn what any of these words mean, so prepare for 3 years' worth of indecipherable blathering, I guess.
Eventually, the spaceship lands on Earth, where it is discovered by kindly old farmers Glenn Ford and Phyllis Thaxter. Phyllis Thaxter.
Oh, look, honey, it's some kind of superhuman space alien whose very existence ought to be terrifyingly incomprehensible to us. Let's keep him.
Glenn Ford.
And this is the point where anybody who's ever had to look after a 3-year-old for more than one day shudders at the thought of how disastrous a concept a toddler with super strength would be, especially one who had gone utterly insane after several years of solitary confinement.
Phyllis Thaxter.
Meh. I'm sure he's inexplicably fine despite being trapped in a small box his entire life.
Exterior, Smallville. The baby grows into Jeff East, who spends his teen years encountering pretty much every single Superman villain and ally over the course of 10 seasons of increasingly shoddy soap opera plots and bad special effects.
Hiding his superpowers.
Jeff East.
Man, pretending to be a weakling sucks. Why won't you let me go in for sports, fake human dad? Is it because I'd be great?
Glenn Ford.
Look, I know you're frustrated, but one day you'll get to use your powers and it won't be for something like sports. I believe you and your abilities are meant for something more meaningful.
Jeff East.
Uh-oh. Did my adoptive dad just tell me that with great power comes great responsibility?
Glenn Ford.
Oh! Fuck!
Drops dead. Jeff East.
Oh, what a cruel irony to have the godlike power to keep my loved ones safe from any large-scale accident or violent event, yet be helpless to save my father from something as mundane as a heart attack. Like, if he'd been caught in, say, a tornado, it would have been incredibly easy to stop him from dying.
Phyllis Thaxter.
so easy. In fact, in that situation, it'd be positively moronic if you didn't save him.
Jeff East.
Right. It'd be such an absurd decision that any hypothetical audience would consider that the moment where the story of my life went off the rails, never to recover. Anyway, I now find myself short one parental figure, so if anybody has a conveniently timed plot development that can fill that particular void?
Green Crystal, sending psychic vibes.
Paging Jeff East. Would Jeff East please report to the North Pole for exposition and Chris Revivification?
Exterior, North Pole. Jeff heads up to the Arctic, where he tosses the green crystal into some ice, causing it to create a giant upside-down bird's nest. Inside this, he finds a massive hologram of Marlon's head. Marlon Brando's head.
Hello, son. I'm here to tell you everything about your heritage and your place in the world. And I mean everything. Seriously, during this conversation, we'll be drifting off into space, somehow while I yammer on for 12 years nonstop.
Jeff East.
12 fucking years of continual info dump? There's no way I'll be able to absorb all that. Please tell me I get at least an hour of recess.
Marlon Brando's head.
Let's begin with the big number one rule. You cannot interfere with human history.
Jeff East.
Oh, so if there's some kind of big disaster like an earthquake or a terrorist attack, I should just stand by and let it happen?
Marlon Brando's head.
What? Oh, no. You can totally step in and help prevent disasters and stuff. Oh, that's fine, Jeff East.
Oh, but I have to do it discreetly so that humanity doesn't find out about aliens and thus have their understanding of the universe shaken to its core.
Marlon Brando's head.
Nah. Go ahead and tell them all about Krypton. Give interviews about it. See if I care.
Jeff East frowns.
So what the fuck do you mean about not interfering in human history then?
Marlon Brando's head.
I don't know. Does the key tenet by which you're supposed to live your life have to mean anything? Jeez.
They float through blobby space for 12 years, and when Jeff returns to Earth, he's grown up into Christopher Reeve
and somehow gotten a campy blue and red suit. He then flies for the first time in the movie, Super Chris.
The implication being that I can now fly thanks to my deepened understanding of my powers,
which by extension implies that I got to the North Pole in the first place by super dog paddling.
Interior Daily Planet. Christopher gets a job at the Daily Planet while wearing huge nerd glasses and doing an awkward spaz routine that makes a young Rick Moranis sit up and take notes. There, he meets Margot Kidder, Christopher Reeve.
Hello there, miss. I hope my stammering, mumbling, head-hunching mannerisms aren't too annoying. It's just that I'm, trying to pile on enough behavioral tics to make my just-a-pair-of-glasses disguise seem less absurdly flimsy.
Margot Kidder.
Well, I'm this paper's ace reporter, although, as with all previous versions of Lois Lane, this aspect of my character pales in comparison to my main defining trait.
They step outside and are immediately mugged. Margot Kidder.
As a nice supernatural peril magnet.
Christopher Reeve.
I see. Well, then, I think I can take a wild guess at who's going to be my hugely coincidental first gig as a superhero.
Margot Kidder.
I don't know what you're talking about. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to go ride a helicopter off a skyscraper.
Christopher Reeve sighs.
I'll go change.
Margot's helicopter trips and falls as Margot plummets 50 stories towards the pavement. Super Chris flies up and catches her.
Margot Kidder. What the fuck is happening?
Super Chris.
Just a superhumanly strong flying dude. Nothing to worry about. I'll just smile charmingly while your brain utterly breaks.
Margot Kidder.
Oh, I'm fine with the flying thing. I've been falling for 500 feet when I hit your arms, which were flying up towards me, which would just, like, increase the impact velocity. Shouldn't that collision have given my body all kinds of interesting new corners?
Super Chris.
What is that? Physics? Let me show you something.
He catches the falling helicopter by its landing skid. All 5 tons of force get absorbed in a piece of metal the size of one guy's hand, which proceeds to not bend or twist or react at all. Super Chris.
Fuck you, physics.
He dumps Margot and the helicopter and goes off on a superhero montage. He nearly kills a jewel thief, blocks a street with a boat, and gets a little girl slapped in the face. Super Chris. I'm sure that all the chaos, panic, and confusion that's bound to result from this sudden spate of alien sightings won't cancel out the benefit of me catching a few burglars. Exterior. Margot's balcony. Super Chris shows up at Margot's house to give an interview. Super Chris. So, yeah, I'm a space alien from the planet Krypton. Margot Kidder.
Fascinating. Where is Krypton? Why did you come here? Are there other Kryptonians around? Will you be sharing any of your scientific knowledge or technology? Can you...
Super Chris. Whoa. Look, you could ask some meaningful questions while you're holding possibly the most important interview in the entire history of journalism, but
how about we go flying around for a while instead?
Margot Kidder.
Being carried around the sky by a scientifically impossible flying brick sounds absolutely terrifying. But what the hell? At least I won't get as much motion sickness as Mary Jane Watson.
Super Chris.
Well, I won't be actually carrying you so much as I'll be holding on to the teensiest tips of your fingers.
Margot Kidder.
But wouldn't that leave me dangling limply in your way, flailing like a rag in the breeze? Oh, right. That's physics talk again.
Super Chris.
Seriously, physics can go eat the biggest possible bag of dicks.
They fly around and look at various sites of New York's metropolis and at the statue of some chick with a torch.
Margot Kidder, this is so magical. I think I'll compose a little poem in my head, one that rhymes and everything. It even perfectly matches the love theme that John Williams wrote for this movie, which suggests that at some point this was intended to be a song, but apparently that is where the movie finally draws the line on ridiculousness.
In the end, Super Chris returns Margot to her home and then leaves. Margot Kidder.
Oh, and now to write a story about my exclusive interview romantic date with Super Chris. Of course, since I didn't get a photo or any other form of proof that this outlandish event ever took place, I guess there's no reason for even my editor to believe that this was anything other than an absurd made-up fantasy of mine.
Christopher Reeve, showing up.
Well, hello, Margot. I was wondering if you were ready for our date?
Margot Kidder.
Wait, what? Are you saying I already agreed to go out with a non-super version of you? Then why the hell are you also trying to seduce me in superhero form? What is the point of deliberately starting a romantic triangle against yourself?
Christopher Reeve.
Well, as I see it, dating's a numbers game. And if both Christopher and Super Chris wind up striking out with you, well, that's what Hector Cortez is for.
Puts on a fake mustache.
Hola, senorita.
Interior. Subterranean lair. Meanwhile, in a secret underground base, Gene Hackman is plotting with the help of Ned Beatty, Valerie Perrine, and his army of distracting Whigs. Gene Hackman. I am an evil mastermind whose enormous wealth is sufficient to construct this elaborate base and plot a criminal scheme that involves purchasing vast quantities of land, but who can't afford any henchmen other than one fat, clumsy moron, and one woman who likes Super Chris, doesn't like me, doesn't want to be involved in anything evil, and honestly, I have no fucking clue what she's doing here. Valerie Perrine.
Aren't you afraid Super Chris will use his studly muscles and handsomeness to stop your evil schemes?
Gene Hackman.
Nope. Because I've got a second evil scheme designed to specifically keep Super Chris from thwarting the first one, holds up the Daily Planet. In his interview with Margot, Super Chris said that Krypton exploded in 1948,
Valerie Perrine.
No, he didn't. The audience saw the entire interview, and that fact never emerged.
Ned Beatty.
Duh, besides, we know that's wrong anyway. The Marlon Brando head said that he'd been dead for thousands of years, what with Super Chris having traveled to Earth at relativistic speeds and all.
Gene Hackman.
As I was saying, chances are that the fragments of Krypton have landed on Earth as meteorites.
Ned Beatty.
Relativistic speeds, I said.
Even assuming some random Kryptonian debris just happened to follow the same trajectory as the spaceship, and mind-meltingly unlikely as that would be, it'd be traveling so much slower that it wouldn't arrive until probably millions of years later.
Gene Hackman.
Ah, but you're forgetting that a meteor could have covered that distance in that time frame due to the rare astrophysical phenomenon. Oh, he just fucking did, okay?
Opens book.
See?
My library of just a couple of hundred books just happened to contain a full-page illustration of a meteorite that landed on Earth sometime or other, and since it's a rock from space, it must be from Krypton. And since it's a part of Super Chris's home planet, I assume that to him it'd be lethally radioactive? Valerie Pine.
Holy fuck. You absolutely do not deserve for this theory to turn out to be correct. This is totally unfair.
Interior Daily Planet. Christopher is hanging around nerding it up when he gets an ultrasonic message from Gene. Gene Hackman in dog frequencies.
Hey, Super Chris. I'm going to poison some orphans unless you meet me at the obvious trap in 5 minutes.
Christopher Reeve. Oh, no. I better get over there right away. I'll just change my clothes by having my work suit literally disappear off my body in midair, which, I thought it wasn't until, like, the next movie until they started giving me stupid new powers whenever the hell they felt like it. He becomes Super Chris and hurries over to Gene's trap. Gene Hackman.
Hello, Super Chris. I will now explain my entire evil scheme to you in an effort to trick you into opening my box of kryptonite, even though I could have just thrown it at you the second you walked in the door.
Super Chris. All right, what's the plan? Gene Hackman.
The Army is testing 2 missiles right now. Due to their laughably lax security protocols, I was able to reset their coordinates, and one of them is going to blow up the San Andreas Fault and dump California into the ocean. This will turn a bunch of worthless desert that I own into hugely valuable beachfront property just so long as nobody minds the difference between the ocean and miles of irradiated rubble, liquefied soil, and corpses.
Super Chris.
California? But Margo happens to be there right now, as insulting a coincidence as that is. Tell me where the detonator for the missiles is. Where's the trigger?
Where's the trigger?
He opens the lead box and is immediately kryptonized. Gene Hackman.
Now, to wait for the missile to destroy California. Oh, and for the other one to blow up, Hackensack.
Valerie Perrine.
What? But Gene... In another insulting coincidence, my mother lives in Hackensack.
Gene Hackman.
Oh, does she? Funny how you could save her life simply by taking that rock off of Super Chris, who would totally fuck over all my plans. Well, I guess I'll just leave you in the room here with him.
Wanders off. Valerie Perrine.
All right, Super Chris, I'll take away the kryptonite if you promise to save my mother before saving Margo. I know I can trust your word because you don't lie.
Super Chris.
Actually, I lie all the time. I have a whole fake identity. I lie more than almost anybody else on the planet. But I guess I'll keep my word this time.
Valerie saves Super Chris. Super Chris.
Oh, thanks. Drop me a line to let me know Gene didn't revenge murder you off, okay?
Flies off. Super Chris chases down the first missile. He pursues it frantically over mountains and through canyons. Super Chris, flying as fast as he can.
Oh, God, so difficult. Do catch up. If only I was unthinkably fast, that I was capable of orbiting the entire planet several times per second.
Finally, he destroys the missile. Then he flies to California, but he's too late to prevent the second missile from striking. Super Chris.
It's okay. I can stop the effects of the earthquake by going underground and just sort of shoving all the rocks back into place. There's bound to be plenty of space for me to work down there 30 feet underground because this movie's increasingly tenuous relationship with scientific fact is starting to reach a stage where most preschoolers would call bullshit.
He unearthquakes California with his bare hands. Super Chris.
All right, job done. Oh, wait. Are those aftershocks that I hear? Well, they appear to be concentrating on one dirt road in the middle of nowhere, almost as though irresistibly drawn there by some danger-attracting force of nature. Oh, God, Margo!
He flies over to find Margo has been buried and killed by an aftershock. Super Chris.
No! Damn it. For all my power, I couldn't save her. As much as people write me off as a boring, helplessly overpowered superhero who wins at everything and has no flaws, in the end, this goes to show that even for me, there are tragic limits, that the possibility for high stakes and tension exists, that there are some things where even my writers won't throw in yet more godlike powers to easily fix... You know what? Fuck it!
Supercris flies off into space, and as much as it's still impossible to believe that this was a thing that actually happened in an actual major motion picture, he flies around the Earth so fast that the Earth starts spinning backwards, which somehow causes time to reverse itself. Supercris. No, that's not what happens. That's how it looks, sure, but in actuality, I just fly so fast that I travel back in time, and the Earth appears to spin the other way, because that's what it would look like from the perspective of someone traveling backwards through time. It's still scientifically impossible, but completely, droolingly, moronically so.
Uh-huh. And then what about the bit at the end where you clearly stop and then start flying just as fast in the opposite direction to start the planet spinning correctly again?
Supercris.
Oh, that. Well, I guess, damn it, I felt so clever when I came up with that slightly more plausible explanation.
He flies back down to the surface and saves Margo. Margo Kidder.
There you are. Thank God. I almost got killed in an earthquake. And wait, I did. You mean to tell me you reversed time itself, but you didn't bother to go back just a few more minutes and to stop the missile from exploding?
Supercris.
I guess, but dumb character behavior is easily the least of our worries at the moment. I mean, as far as I can tell, there should actually be two of me now. Smiles. But hey, now I know I can time travel, so everything should be piss easy from here on out. Now, if I ever encounter a space terrorist's nuclear Superman or whatever the fuck was going on in Superman 3, I can just undo the past whenever shit gets real and be guaranteed an easy win every time.
Margo Kidder.
Yeah, well, I guess we have to assume Professor McGonagall made you give your time travel powers back to the Ministry of Magic or whatever.
Supercris tosses Jean in prison and flies off into space, where his cape flutters majestically in the breeze. In fucking space. The fucking space breeze caused by the currents in space air, I guess, and physics.
Oh, thank God it's over.
Biology.
Is it safe to come out now, you think?
Chemistry. I think so. Seriously, guys, I'm gonna need, 10 showers after this. Astronomy.
I vote we just keep rewatching The Martian until the headaches stop.
End.
Movie Snark is a project of Bad Maria Productions. Please visit badmariaprods.com for more, and thanks for listening.